got some copies of some stuff that we're talking about today.
Ready, Ashley?
Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to TCD Board of Supervisors monthly meeting, Tuesday, January 30th, 2018 at 2 p.m. Held here at our 2918 Ferguson Street, Southwest in Tumwater. Let's have introductions. Let's start with my left, and we'll go around to the right.
Richard Mankemeyer, TCD Board Auditor.
Eric Johnson, TCD Chair.
Linda Powell, Board Supervisor.
Samantha Fleischner, Board Supervisor.
Sarah Moorhead, TCD Staff.
Amy Franks, TCD Treasurer.
Ashley McBee, TCD Staff.
Shauna Joy, State Conservation Commission Staff.
Amy Hendershot, United States Department of Agriculture, Natural Resources, Conservation Service, District Conservationist.
Woo!
And then you in the blue there?
Oh, Phyllis Farrell, I'm a resident of Thurston County.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Cynthia Stewart, I'm resident of Thurston County.
Thank you.
Annabelle Kirshner, resident of Thurston County.
Thank you.
Paula Holroyd, member of League of Women Voters, a resident of Thurston County.
Esther Kronenberg, resident of the county.
Thank you, Esther.
Joel Hansen, associate.
Joe Hanna, Thurston Ag Advisory Committee.
Okay, so we are audio recording for the here at the district, and for those of you who would like to partake, please join us. Participate. For those of you who would like to participate, please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and we'll have Richard lead. And our flag is over here to the left.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great. Thank you. And then we have a new public comment forum. And do we have a public comment sign-up sheet?
Yeah.
Okay. Would anyone have please? Thank you. And then we're doing 3 minutes apiece. We have 30 seconds, so I'll kind of give you a wave, and then hopefully you can respectfully stop when I lower my hand. How's that? We don't have any official plan clock, so I'm always going to read the comment. And you're always welcome to written comment as well. And I will pull my stopwatch up here. Yep, that's going to work. Okay. And so, Esther, I don't want to butcher your last name, so okay. I'll just say Esther.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My name's Esther Kronenberg. I speak as a private citizen interested in the cause of conservation, the protection of natural resources. I first learned of the trouble at the district at a county commission meeting, made calls to various staff and others to learn what happened, listened to recordings of past district meetings, and shared my concerns with members of the public after learning members of the board failed to attend and vote in November 6th meeting that resulted in the loss of one-third of the 2018 budget. I want to thank Supervisors Mankemeyer and Johnson for reaching out to me at the last meeting as allies, wanting to share your perceptions of the situation, and offering to send me documents corroborating your expressed belief that staff was involved in unethical financial mismanagement. Your accompanying letter stated this was just the tip of the iceberg. I have shared these documents with others who have reviewed them. I would like to read the first document sent to me by Supervisor Mankemeyer from the website Ripoff Report. TCD, sexist, racket, incompetent liars. TCD of Olympia, Washington is sexist. If you're a man, don't even bother applying. The women in charge of TCD want to keep it the way it is. They are completely and utterly incompetent, extremely sexist towards men, and don't want any outside opinions, no matter what they say. And they play games, telling you one thing and doing another. They will lie to you and blow you off. Look out for TCD of Olympia. It's a racket full of spiteful people. Stay clear, especially the TCD bullshit native plant sales. They'll just sell you garbage plants. This was rather shocking, so I Googled the Ripoff Report website where it was posted. I run consumer affairs listed as an unaccredited site and has 28 of 30 reviews detailing what a scam it is. Wikipedia says, Ripoff Report allows users over the age of 14 to complain anonymously about any firm or person. The site does not verify the identity of users. It neither investigates, confirms, nor corroborates the accuracy of submissions. According to Bloomberg Businessweek, it's an operation is an example of, quote, how to make money rebuilding reputations having destroyed them first, which is why a federal court stated victims have, quote, probable cause to sue for extortion and racketeering. Then I read your staff biographies. I saw young people and motivated to work preserving the environment, not to make lots of money. They may be from different backgrounds than you, but that hardly qualifies them as the enemy you so seem to fear and attack. As organic farmers, you're well aware of the dangers of pesticides, how they destroy beneficial organisms, rendering the soil lifeless. You may want to grow this conservation district in new directions, but is it beneficial or ethical to spray this work environment with the equivalent of Agent Orange in the form of these hateful words to kill what's here so you can start afresh? So far, I've received no information from you that has altered my view. You have not fulfilled the most basic fiduciary duty of your office. We'd certainly be willing to meet with you as you have requested, but suggest if you truly believe there's been a misuse of public funds, you have a responsibility to report it to the State Commission and the Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you, Esther. Okay, Paula?
I'm Paula Holroyd. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Thurston County and several other Thurston County organizations. Today I'm speaking to you as a Thurston County resident. After attending several Thurston Conservation District meetings and reading as much as I can find about Thurston Conservation, I am very disheartened. Mr. Johnson, you excuse yourself for not knowing how to run a meeting because you're not a professional. Really? In 2 minutes online, I found and printed a copy of the basics of Robert's Rules. I strongly urge you to get online and get a better handle of your job description and how to run a meeting. A brief example, the chair does not make a motion. The chair asks for a motion. If there is no motion, the question dies for lack of a motion. Or if there's no second, the question dies for a lack of a second. The chair only votes to break a tie. The Thurston Conservation District is a very integral part of Thurston County. It provides a wealth of information as well as many important services. Those of you who made a decision to severely disrupt the funding have done a real disservice to the community. When you point your finger and blame others, remember, there are three other fingers pointing back at you. Your decision to try to take Thurston Conservation District on a different course has been as successful as replacing a 3-inch water meter with a 3/4-inch water meter to save money. Somehow you did not drop a plan or study the consequences. Your idea of how to guide the Thurston County or Thurston Conservation District into the future is also lacking. Your job is to set a course for the present and future of Thurston Conservation District. If you set the course properly, things work smoothly. If you design a golf course, it's not your job to walk along with a professional golfer and tell them what club to use, what kind of shot to hit, how high to hit it, and how much spin to put on the ball. The mission of Thurston Conservation District, a non-regulatory agency, tries to conserve and sustain the beneficial use and protection of local natural resources through partnership in county, rural, agricultural, and urban communities, as well as local, state, federal, and tribal agencies. If this is not your primary mission, you need to seriously consider resigning. Honestly, can you say at the end of the day, you have done the best you can in your capacity for the citizens of Thurston County?
Thank you. Cynthia?
I'm assuming I have to stand over here because of the recorder. Is that it?
Oh, that would just.
I could have.
Yeah, you can do it over there. It just might be.
I'm here now, so I. So I'm a supporter of the Thurston Conservation District. I'm a Thurston County unincorporated area resident. I've been aware of your programs for quite some time and have taken advantage of the native plant sale on a number of occasions, and those plants were just fine. I attended my first Board of Supervisors meeting earlier this month and was quite dismayed, frankly, at what I heard. The board was unprepared, the meeting didn't follow standard procedures, and a significant amount of time was wasted, not just for you all, but also for those people who were watching, and I had to leave after an hour. But this led me to wonder what else is going on administratively. I've been hearing rumors, and I wanted to check it out, so I asked for a copy of your 2017 and 2018 budgets. And what I saw was really puzzling, and so I have these questions that I hope that you will answer publicly. Why is your 2018 budget nearly $700,000 less than 2017 budget? How can you function with a 38% reduction in your budget? When was your decision to shift from an assessment in 2017 to increased rates and charges made for 2018, and why? I've also studied the Thurston County budget extensively. I've been watching them for a number of years, and I don't see anywhere in their budget any corresponding expenditure to the Thurston Conservation District for the $269,000 that you've got in your budget coming from them. So that's puzzling. And then I don't understand why there would be such a significant reduction as $383,000 from the State Conservation Commission in this one-year difference. And so what I would like to ask is that you publicly talk about this, explain it. There hasn't been anything in the newspaper that I've seen. There doesn't seem to be any logic here. There's no transparency. So I would really like to request that you take that on and make the information available. Thank you.
Thank you. Annabelle?
Well, thank you for having me back. I was here in December because I'd heard that there had been the district had failed to receive $500,000 for people failing to show up or call into a meeting. And there seemed to be no good explanation at the time. Since then, Eric Johnson, Richard McNamara, and Jim Goucher have all very pleasantly, we've had some pleasant conversations and appreciate your talking to me, but I'm still puzzled by the why there was this snafu. You've also, all of you, I don't know if you've heard, but in talking to me, talked about your commitment. You joined the board for your commitment to agriculture. I want to congratulate you for being willing to serve on a board, because it is a lot of work, and for your commitment to agriculture. But the broad goal of the district is to conserve and sustain the beneficial use and production of natural resources. So this is the most important goal, given that funds have been lost. I've also heard about tension between the board and longtime staff. I looked off that rip-off report, which is really disgusting, and I too have had good luck with plants from the native plant sale. My oxialis are doing just fine. There was also some contention of a conflict of interest relating to salmon recovery efforts, but we've looked that up, and that was adjudicated with a finding of no conflict. So it seems time to focus on the main business of the conservation district, and efforts to help farmers must fall within that broad mission. It appears that only one full-time member has resigned, James Waterford. A couple of other staff employed, and he was at one time honored as the Southwest Region Employee of the Year. So that could be a bit of a loss, since it seemed like he did quite a bit. Some employees have had their hours reduced. This can be a form of squeezing out employees if they are dependent on that salary. And it's difficult for staff when that happens. These losses hinder important functions of the district, I think in my term, nutrient management is one of the most important. And we have toxic algae blooms due to animal waste, failing septic tanks, etc., contaminating our lakes and oyster beds. And I think it is very important to make sure these efforts continue. I like to swim in Long Lake in the summertime. It's one of the few free places for people to swim in the summer. And it was closed. I mean, I trotted there in my swimsuit, and it was closed due to a toxic algae bloom. So I just want to urge staff to focus on the most important missions of the Conservation Board and try and get together and save Long Lake in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hanna?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
No,
I'll speak loud.
Okay,
thanks for the opportunity to speak today. As some of you may be aware, I'm a candidate for the in the next coming election. In my statement, I said that conservation easements would be day one for me, major priority. And I brought up that because I just discovered a piece of property in Lacey that was it's pierced from the signage on it, was purchased through RCO monies. It's now a public park, but it's basically just open space and a farm. This would be, and it's lots of acres. And the grounds that it sits on have everything. There's forestry on it, there's wetlands on it, there's a stream across the street from it that is part of the property, there's a stream adjacent to it. This would be an ideal piece to go in and do a demonstration farm or a home district office and demonstration farm. The houses that were on it previously are gone, the foundations are gone, so there's no issue with that. You can go in and build something new, and I think it's a chance to partner with Lacey, the city of Lacey. I would strongly encourage you to start looking at that now, and if elected, it, like I said, that'll be day one for me. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. We've had one more person enter the room. Would you like to state your name and make sure you sign in, and then we are audio recording this for your information.
My name is Diston Denniston. I am a citizen here in Thurston County resident, and also have a bid in for the upcoming elected seat. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Agenda review. So I'd like to anybody have any suggestions? I have a couple. I'll start with Samantha.
I was just looking at some of the like MOUs and stuff at the bottom of our agenda, like the Deschutes Work Group MOU, RCO project, and the Voluntary Stewardship Project MOU. I think that we should probably move those up further so that we make sure to get them done.
Want to move them after 7 before the board meeting minutes?
That's fine with me. I just would think that they're important enough that we need to get them done and not table them.
Okay. So if you guys can help move the order on them out, let's go ahead and do
11, 12, 13.
Yeah, let's do that. But mine's going to get pretty butchered up. So
after 7?
After 7, so yeah. We'll do 11, 12, and 13 after 7.
Do you want me to take notes of this?
Jim?
Do you want so that you can have them?
Yeah. And then, do you have anything?
Well, I thought we were supposed to talk about the hiring an executive director.
Okay, so what I'd like to do on that is under 7A, have 7B, TCD Action Plan Executive Director. Under 7A, be 7B. Okay, and then all, is that it? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll keep you on that.
Oh, wait, one other thing. Okay. Shauna's issue she brought up about I thought we handled that, but I guess.
No, that's the Washington State. Let's see, that is.
That was the, what do you call it, Shauna?
Action plan?
For solving the issues.
Okay, the TCD action plan. Where would you like to?
I don't care, as long as I do it.
How about after Deschutes Work Group MOU?
Okay.
We do that. So.
If we have that printed out somewhere, I don't think it's.
I asked for Sarah to bring copies of it, and she's passed them out.
Okay. So,
you have a copy of that. Okay, and then, did you have anything, Richard? Or what do you have done, I guess? Washington State Conservation Commission executive session. I'd like to talk about that after, I guess we'll put that after Shauna. So make that C. Washington State Conservation Commission executive session. And that was the meeting on November.
So we're going into executive session after the department?
No.
Oh.
Did I say executive?
Yeah.
Washington State Conservation Commission Executive Committee. Session. And
what's in it?
And the letter that was written to them. So, do you have that?
I'm a little unclear about what you're talking about.
Okay.
A letter written to the executive committee.
Yeah.
From.
Let's see if I have it. Washington State Conservation Commission Executive Committee. And so that's what I want to put on the agenda for C.
Okay? You're asking if I have a letter?
No, I'm saying we're going to put that on the agenda.
Oh, okay. I thought you were asking.
No, Washington State Conservation Commission Executive Committee. Okay. And then TCD Communications. Let's do that after action plan TCD.
So that would be
TCD
like in between 7 and 8 still.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're forward. Okay. And what did you call that again?
TCD Communications. Did you have something?
Is that 7?
Yeah.
Or wait, did I give you a chance?
TCD Communications with 7-1.
CD.
TCD Communications comes after TCD Action Plan, which comes after 11, 12, and 13, which were moved in between 7 and 8. So, I have written down, kind of.
Kevin, did you have anything, Richard?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it was included in the acting executive director report, but there was another contract that I sent out information on prior to the electronic board packet, in the electronic board packet. It just noted, so both times, and it just noted that I would be asking for consideration of adoption on that as well. That's the South Sound Green grant that we were awarded So if we could put that in with the MOU and contract approval, I think that would be great.
What do you have? What would that be?
So that would be like group it with 11, 12, and 13, which is the MOU. So it would be like 13A, basically.
Okay.
What one is that called, Sarah?
It's the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation grant agreement.
Yes. She's not going. Go ahead, Sarah. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, and then Amy was next.
So I'm Sarah and I are number 15 on the agenda, and I've just received some new information, which is a different interpretation of policy regarding our easement programs. So if the board is okay, I would like to move that to maybe next month's agenda.
Love that.
Especially accounting for the length of this.
Right.
So that I can provide accurate information depending on further information on that interpretation of policy.
Okay.
So strike 15, and then any other questions, Diana?
Well, if you're striking 15, then I was going to suggest moving it up so our tax dollars aren't going for Sandra Schott to sit here.
Okay. And then I'd like to move that whole group of partner reports above the policies and procedures updates. So we'll do
5 and 4.
5 and 4, yeah. I know that's
do you want me to just keep this one so they can remind you?
Sure.
There?
Okay. Okay. So,
I'm sorry, Chair, where did we move the last one?
15 is to,
go ahead.
15 is to February.
Yes, and then partner reports?
Partner reports, we're just going to move partner reports about policies and procedure updates.
Thank you.
Okay. So, we have Amy and Seth and Jeff.
Yes.
Let me ask, any more agenda revisions? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So we have an environmental quality incentives program, sign-up deadlines, March 15th. That's our EQIP program. We were doing things a little bit differently this year. We're still under a federal hiring freeze. We're down significant staff. So there is no limitation on funding allowed per application this year, with the exception of the what's mandated in the Farm Bill, which is $450,000 per entity, per person, per Farm Bill. So we will continue with our very popular high tunnel program. In the past, we've limited funds for those high tunnels to $6,000, one high tunnel per producer. That's out the window. So we are holding a $15,000 cap on payments for that practice only, and we will start funding additional high tunnels, so you can sign up for more than one. So it's a little bit of a change. We have about $1 million set aside for livestock producers to implement conservation practices that address soil erosion, water quality, and air quality issues on AFO-CAFOs. That's been really, really helpful in the past year. We're going to continue with that effort here locally. We also have an native Olympia oyster restoration initiative that we will be doing in its third year. And if we don't get very much interest, we'll terminate that program after this year. But we've come up with some creative ways to work with tribes to see if we can do some Olympia oyster restoration, specifically in Henderson Inlet, Bud Inlet in there. So if you know any producers or tideland owners who may be interested, maybe they're not agricultural producers per our definition, we could probably get creative with some of our tribes and utilize their history with subsistence agriculture to meet that requirement. So that sign up is March 16th. On a different note, our local work group meetings are coming up. I'll be coordinating with Shauna, and Thurston CD has been gracious enough to host this year's local work group again. In the past, I've worked with Eric, if the board has a different preference and who I work with on the board, please let me know. That's worked fine in the past, and we've had really good outcomes with our conservation assistance programs, and we've gotten very, very good information from those work group meetings. So if the board has a different direction, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll be coordinating with Shauna and Eric to set up our next meeting and convene the five county natural resource professionals and agricultural communities to talk about what the natural resource issues that are facing agriculture today. USDA takes that input very seriously, and in general, we accept the thoughts from the community on how we should be spending our money locally and to what natural resource issues in the ag community. And that's been very successful. Actually, that's the reason why we're going whole hog into this high tunnel program, is because one of the comments that I received when I got here in 2014 was, Amy, we don't really care about natural resource conservation and farmland if there's no farmland left to protect. So I've been realigning a lot of our resources in the best way I can to not only doing conservation on farmland, but also making sure that the farmland is still there and that the operators who are still in business are economically viable. And that high tunnel piece is critical for that. We usually see about a $20,000 increase in gross sales 1 year after installation of a very small footprint. So although sort of out of the normal conservation activities for NRCS, I do think it has a significant merit in our community for economic inputs on the farmland. So I'll be coordinating that with Eric and company here shortly, and Shauna's help, and hopefully. And stay tuned. I will probably be announcing that date at the next board meeting.
When are you announcing at the next board meeting? So when would be, that was going to be my question, is when would those meetings taking place in case the board doesn't want to do a different direction and have another supervisor?
Depends on.
Well, I think we're required stuck with the deadline by the end of May.
End of May.
But then you usually have some tasks after the local work group meeting, so maybe by the end of April?
I like the end of April. By the end of April would be my
put all the input from the local work group into your system and stuff.
So if you had an official response by the board by the end of February, would that be too late, or do you want one now?
I'd like one now. If there's strong feelings or you guys need to talk about it, that's fine. Otherwise, if it's an easy decision, now's great.
Well, how did Mr. Johnson do the last two?
Mr. Johnson did fantastic.
Did he want to elaborate anymore?
I think you'd like me to, wouldn't you?
Well, we'll do this here. Two times ago, talked a lot.
Here's an example.
It's good for water quality.
There's some, you know, there are some competing concerns between different land uses, right? The foresters want the money for the forest land for tree planting and thinning and root rot pockets and all those things that are going on. The dairies want the money to improve their facilities for waste management and livestock rotation and things like that. So what was unique about what Eric brought to the table was that he was able to explain what he goes through on a daily basis on his dairy to a forest landowner in terms that forest landowner could understand, and they understood each other. And that was a really, really unique and powerful way to communicate that the government certainly can't facilitate in any other way. So, you know, I think mostly, you know, Eric does introductions and kind of sets the tone. Shauna generally facilitates the meeting, and then I kind of interject where we're shifting off of policy or, you know, keep us within the box as we have to. But it's been very, very good in the past, and I've got a lot of really positive comments from all five counties speaking to how effective the meetings have been and how well they've been run, in part thanks to Shauna's help. But I think they've been going really, really well, so unless there's concerns. And thank you again, Thurston CD, for continuing to chair those meetings.
I think it's a great idea. I like the high tunnel idea too.
I don't think we need an official anything. I mean, you did it last year and the year before that. Mm-hmm. You're the chair, so.
Okay.
Do you want it?
Yeah, one more year for sure. I mean, we'll see what happens after that. Okay, so I get enough response for you?
That's all I need.
Oh, just. Agreed. You did a great job, you guys.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you, Amy. WSCC, Shauna Joy. Welcome.
Thanks. So this is Shalna Joy from the Conservation Commission for the recording. And it's that time of year again when I go around to all the conservation districts and I talk about our Conservation Accountability and Performance Program, or CAP. You'll hear me use that acronym a lot, C-A-P-P. We used to call it good governance. If you've been around the district for a while, this is the new evolution of that. And there are two parts to that program. There's an accountability piece, which lists out some elements that districts are required to do, either by law or in WAC. And then there is a performance piece, which is a best practices document that's still under construction. So this year we're implementing the accountability only piece. There are 13 elements to that, or 14. And I'm sorry I didn't bring handouts today, but I will email this out in follow-up to all of you. And in running down through these 14 elements, there's really one that comes to mind right now that you all should follow up on. And that one is making sure all board supervisors and public records officers are current on your Open Public Meetings and Public Records Act training. So this is a something that needs to be completed by everybody, and I think, Linda, you might be the only one who hasn't turned in that verification form to the commission yet. So I'll follow up with you and make sure we have it. And that's the only thing that I see on this Conservation Accountability and Performance Program list right now that you need to be concerned about. There is a nexus, though, with another element that you decided to talk about today, which is TCD communications that you added to your agenda. And one other item on here is number 11, keeping the public informed of conservation district activities. So I'm glad to see you're going to talk about that and evaluate if there are things that you can do to improve a little later on. And I'll admit I was concerned when the agenda came out today and I didn't see a continuing discussion about the action plan that we started together at the last board meeting. But I am glad to see that's on the agenda now. And I look forward to working with you guys on that if you'd like my assistance. And other than that, I'll answer any questions if I can.
Any questions, Tony? The only question I had was on the Washington State Conservation Commission Executive Committee meeting that was held in November. You were going to give us, or I asked for, or you were going to give me the minutes from that meeting, and I haven't got those.
Executive committee meetings?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Conservation Commission meetings that happened?
That happened the 28th through the 30th, and then...
So that was WACD happened first, their annual meeting happens first, and then the Conservation Commission has a commission meeting the day after that.
Okay, so then there was notes for that meeting, correct?
We do minutes, and those aren't approved until the January commission meeting.
Oh,
so that was just happened.
Okay.
That those are approved, and those should actually be on our website now.
Okay.
Once they're approved by the commission, they're posted.
So I would go find them.
Mm-hmm. We have a commission meeting webpage where agendas and public notices are put, and then when the minutes, if you can't find them there, just ding me again and let me know, and okay. I can get the official copy from Lori. She maintains those records on our staff.
Okay. And then, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so, that was part of C. And then, also I want to talk about the letter sent to Washington State Conservation Commission Executive Committee that was sent from Samantha Fusher, Board Supervisor, Thurston Conservation District, and my question is, did you write that letter, Samantha?
Yeah.
Okay, because what each, this is done in a Word document file, and there's a, when you do it on Word, you can double click on the right side, and it gives you information on where it was, what computer was created on, stuff like that. So like Sarah can pull up that document, double click on the right side, and it comes up that it was from my phone, it says it's last modified on 11/30/2017 at 9:47 a.m. and it, when it comes back as Thurston Conservation District, that it was created at, on a Thurston Conservation District accounting computer. So you're saying yes, Sarah?
No, I'm just nodding. Okay.
Oh, okay, you're signing. So was that created on a Conservation District computer?
No.
It wasn't?
No.
Okay. Well, that's the question I had on it.
You could have called me and asked me.
Well, you're here now. I might as well ask you now. So you in fact wrote the letter, and the district's computers had nothing to do with it?
I wrote the letter.
And the district's computers had nothing to do with it?
I emailed it.
From the district, or?
To the district.
To the district. And then the district sent it out to everybody else?
Oh, I emailed it to everyone else.
Okay, so you would have sent it to the district in a single email then?
I sent it to the district in an email.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the questions I had on it. Any other questions? Okay. So, district funding, rates and charges.
I have a question, Eric.
Okay.
You partner with police procedures.
Thank you.
No problem.
So what do I have next then?
Policies and procedures.
Oh, policies and procedures. Okay. Okay, Richard. What do you want to? Do you have the general policies and procedures, and I will assign you to the task. Okay. Go ahead.
Is there a ban from motion 11-013018, talking about 6.1.8 check writing policy?
Okay.
I need to read it.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, I'll read it. I'll make a motion. Only board members are authorized to sign checks. All checks will be signed by the board auditor or one other board member. In the event the board auditor is not available to sign checks, duty goes to the vice chair, then the board chair.
Okay. So, that was a motion?
That was a motion.
Well, we haven't finished discussing it yet.
So you sort of motion, and then second, and then we discuss it.
Okay, so I thought we had to second a motion that was already hashed out. Is that the case?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So if you want to...
So I seconded it so we could talk about it.
Again. Okay, so we're going to talk about... what do you want to do this motion, Richard? So it was a motion by Richard, seconded by Linda. Now we're going to have a discussion. Let's discuss it.
Okay, there's
a
question
now.
Sarah.
I have a couple of questions. I see the motion here as it's stated, and it's referencing 6.1.8 check writing policy, which is not a current policy that we have at the district.
Yeah, this will be a new policy.
Is the motion the policy that you're wanting to, or are you making a motion to create a policy?
Yes.
The first one or the second one?
Yeah, we're creating a new policy.
Okay, okay.
So wouldn't it be called a check signing policy? Since we're just talking about signing the checks and not writing.
Would you like to make that amendment?
Well, discuss a little more, but yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Is there a copy of that policy that's been drafted, or are we going to draft a policy?
Well, this would be it. Would be a supplement to 6.1.
With just the text that's stated here, because the other policy formats have like the when it was established, the purpose of the policy itself, and then the procedure afterwards of the format in the policy and procedure handbook. Is that something that you're looking to develop? Is some a policy that matches the others in that format?
What's in that section of the policies and procedures?
Right. But like 1.3.1, we added like that additional component to it and developed its own page with a procedure attached.
Well, it, where it fits in there, I mean, we'll have to dig it up and take a look at it if you want to do that.
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to clarify to make sure if you wanted the additional procedure associated to have its own policy procedure page as a as an official policy that we adopt, like the other ones.
Oh, it was going in that section of 6.1.
As a new component, correct? Okay, not amending a different policy.
Questions?
Questions? Yeah, I just would like some clarification. It says only board members are authorized to sign checks, period. So does that mean that you're eliminating having an outside service sign the checks as well? Is, I mean, I just would like some clarification as to having it internal only to board members. I don't know if that goes against stuff with the state auditor and how we operate. I know that there's a reason that we have an outside CPA that assists with the district finances, so I'm just wondering if there's been like legal and or conservation commission review as to making eliminating everyone else as signers.
Well, it's taking the control back to the board and not having it outside of the district.
I understand that, but we're a public agency. We do need outside financial oversight as
well,
a district.
Well, that may be, but we don't have to have someone outside sign our checks.
So maybe oversight still by Steve Davis, but Richard's asking for him not to sign checks.
And I'm just wondering why.
To keep it internal to the board, since the board is ultimately responsible. He's not an employer or anything of the district. He's an outside entity.
I think there's...
He's a third party that is a non-biased third party, which is typically why you have an outside firm.
Not necessarily typically, no. How do you come up with typically?
Any public agency would hire an outside firm to make sure that nothing internally is going awry, as we are responsible financially for the district.
Right. That could be as an auditor, sure, they could audit it, but they don't necessarily sign the checks. They're just going to audit what you're doing.
We have the state auditor's office that verifies that.
Okay. So why do we need someone outside to sign our checks?
I'm just wondering if you went and asked if there's any legal ramifications or if there's something that the Conservation Commission could add to this before we go and make a check writing policy that is for check signing. That, I mean, I'm just wanting information as to why we're doing this.
It's very simple.
I understand you want control, Richard.
The board needs to have control of the check writing.
But the board isn't getting any control because right now you're leaving it to the board auditor and the vice chair and the board chair. So you're delegating authority to two signers, whereas you're saying that it's the board's responsibility.
Would it be three? Would it be the board auditor, the vice chair, and the board chair? I mean, I'm okay with just the board auditor and the vice chair.
But they're not always going to be available to sign checks.
What about if it says board auditor and another board member? Or
it already says that. It says checks will be signed by the board auditor and one other board member. Really, the second sentence is really just about the preferred order of who that would be if they're available.
Okay.
So every board member could be the second signer if they're available.
Go ahead, sir.
I have a couple of questions. One is, I'm following what Linda's saying about the checks being signed by the board auditor and one other member, and that does that leave that open to any other member of the board?
Because
it doesn't
designate
in that sentence.
Yes.
If
the
board auditor is not available, then the other check signer could be the vice chair or the board chair.
So the second sentence really should just be an order of preference, perhaps, of depending on who's available. And then, And then where we left off discussing before was that there should be some provision for those rare occasions where no board member is available for the second sign-in. That.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a good idea.
So that it wouldn't get signed at all until 2 weeks.
Well, like I said, we're here. Every 2 weeks we do checks anyway, so.
Mike has a little more forward. Thank you. Go ahead. Keep speaking, Sarah.
My question is, you know, just trying to think about accounting for anything that could potentially ever happen in the future so that we have a policy to follow if, you know what I mean? So if for some reason something happens to one or two of you, maybe to the vice chair and the auditor, the board chair and the auditor, and you're unavailable for an extended period of time, I'm just concerned about writing a policy that limits to a few humans without contingency plans, whether that's on the board, whether that's a third-party CPA, whether that's staff.
Because right now it's
I'm just concerned about getting into
an issue. Third-party CPA, and then, you know, Amy doesn't sign the checks, so, and you don't sign the checks. Who else signs the checks here at the district?
Typically no one except for the auditor and the third-party CPA. If the auditor's not available, another board member is where we go first, and there's four of you to ask to come in. Typically we start with the board chair and the vice chair and then go down the list from there. So that's sort of our triage method that we use currently. If for some reason all five board members are unavailable and there's an immediate need for a check before another supervisor is available, then we ask for permission and we have a staff signer. So our executive director, Kathleen Whalen, was a staff signer on that, and our deputy director, Amy Antwinica.
And then Dave Nygaard was also?
Dave Nygaard was as well.
And then who else?
I think that was it. Yeah, I think that was it. And we haven't updated that with current staffing.
Okay. So you're at, so Richard, you're asking for this to be in. There's 6.14, 6.15. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no current 6.18.
Here's 6.18. Right after district petty cash.
Okay, so this would be a standalone policy by itself then.
Correct. Be within that.
Within that section. Okay.
So if you look at the format of some of the other policies under section 6.1, mm-hmm. You can see the format that's listed where it has that, when it was adopted and the policy and then the procedure to follow so that staff can implement the policy. I think for clarity on our end, to be able to implement a policy that you're approving, it would be good for the staff to have it in that format and that additional procedure.
As far as procedurally?
Right. So well, right now this is a motion,
right.
But to turn that into an official policy.
That's something you can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So basically, the board auditor signs anyway. It would be giving signing authority, the way this is written, to vice chair. Oh no, it says any other board member. So basically, this policy makes all check signing to the board.
Right. That's what it says.
Okay.
That's what we're
saying.
And
it just pulls Steve off of it, right? We can still use him as outside oversight.
What? Oh, go ahead.
This is Samantha Fleischner. I just have a question. How long has Steve been doing what he does with the district?
20-some years.
Yeah, about 20 years.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Go ahead, Amy.
Steve's a professional auditor. I think he has provided a lot of really valuable information. And I think it's fine if two board members are the signers on checks. A lot of districts do it that way, but I wouldn't want to cut him out completely of that review process,
right.
Because he's brought things to my attention and to Richard's attention that I think have been really valuable.
Okay.
So then would he still come in every 2 weeks to at the check signing?
Well, learning, you know, more about what his job is and what he does, I think what he does for us is
fairly inexpensive, you know, I don't think his overall bill on an annual basis.
Well, he really doesn't do that much. He just comes in and goes down through the check register and looks and makes sure everything matches up, but he stops there. He doesn't really do anything else that I'm aware of. I sat right here and talked to him. And I looked through his contract or agreement or with us, and I read through there, and all the other stuff he's not responsible for and doesn't look at it.
Yeah, he mainly ties invoices to checks.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, while I'm sure it's a valuable service, maybe we can get that done for less.
Well, you know, that's possible.
You always put an RFQ out for that, too.
Go ahead, Samantha.
Samantha Fleischman here. There's something to be said for long-term relationships that are successful that we should probably embrace with certain things, especially when someone's really familiar with the district and has been working cooperatively and functionally, and we have a great standing relationship, and Amy just said that he's value-added and provides good service. So I think that, yes, maybe we might be able to save a couple of bucks, but we won't be able to regain that type of relationship, and relationships are invaluable in some instances. So.
Right. Well, I mean, this discussion's getting off on a tangent there, too. We're looking at the motion that's in front of us.
I have another question.
Okay, go ahead.
When would this take effect?
When would it take effect is your question.
Well, if the motion's passed, it takes effect. When would be the best time for it to take effect?
I think it would be a good idea for us to review Steve Davis's contract to see if there's a required notice for termination of his services.
And that's not the motion. The motion is not terminate Steve. That just got off on a tangent somewhere. We're talking about our check writing policy and who's going to do that. We didn't bring Steve up. He's not on here.
I just want to make sure that there's not anything in writing about changing, amending, or dissolving his contract that we're going to be in violation of if this is an immediate.
There's nothing in this that says that.
The only difference would be that he won't be signing the checks. He would still be coming and doing whatever he does.
Go ahead, Samantha.
So I'm going to go to Linda on this one. And just for clarification, Richard, we should make sure that doesn't say check writing policy, that it's check signing policy.
Okay.
Because we're not writing the checks. That's Amy's job.
So that we would need a friendly amendment to that motion.
And I think that we may still want to look at having one staff member as a signer for emergencies. If, you know, Eric's busy farming, I'm out of town, Doug's at NACD, and, you know, Richard's not available, and if Linda's the only person to sign, we should have one designated staff member for those emergency situations.
Yeah, I agree. There should be an emergency staff person.
And in the past, when an emergency situation would happen, Amy or Sarah or Kathy would send me an email asking, will you approve and allow this person to sign this check on your behalf? And then they would take that email that I said, yes, I approve it, and they would keep it with the purchase order and the copy of the check. So it's very, very specific.
How often does that happen?
It happened once or twice the entire time I was the auditor. So rarely, but like Sarah said, we need to kind of prepare for, you know, we don't want to put ourselves in a box that we can't get out of.
And it still leaves the control with the auditor. The auditor would have to approve that.
We have five of us. We think all five would be unavailable.
It's happened, I guess.
I just don't want to get us put in a box where either business doesn't happen, you know, or we have a policy that's limiting us, you know what I mean? Because we're obviously not going to go against the policy that we have, so if I just don't want to get us backed into a corner.
I think you're okay on that. I mean, I'm up here twice a week, so mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see a problem with that, and there's five people, so I can see it both ways, really.
And my thing is not that all five of us wouldn't be available, it's just that four of the five of us may not be available,
sure.
And we need to have two signatures on the check.
Sure.
So who would potentially would it be that designated person?
It would probably typically be the executive director.
Perhaps something that would be more comfortable too is just stating language in this policy with approval of board auditor, with main board member, you know, something like that, so that it's not.
So what do you think of that?
Works for me.
Okay, so how would the language say on that? The board members are up.
Only board.
So it would be board, or take out only, and it would say board members are authorized to sign checks. All checks will be signed by a board auditor and one other board member.
We have to add in there either your executive director or your acting executive director.
Right. So how would we state that? Do you have any language suggestions, Sarah, on if you took out only, and then what would it say after board member?
I'm actually going to ask. Amy has a question.
Okay. Yeah, from an HR perspective, so currently the deputy director does have authority to sign checks, so you'd be taking authority away from somebody, which is a HR concern. Just putting that out there.
Say that again.
Currently, our deputy director has the authority to sign checks. So by not including that in this policy, I'm just bringing up that could be an HR concern.
Okay, well, I don't think that's the same. Go ahead, Shauna.
This is Shauna Joy with the commission. Is that specific task or duty written in to that position's job description, or is it just something that she's been authorized to do separate from her job description?
In the past. I don't think there is an assistant executive director description. There is? In this policies and procedures book?
About deputy director.
Or deputy director?
No, there's a deputy director job description. It's not in our policy.
Okay, I'm sorry, I interrupted. Can you say that again, Shauna?
Yes, that's what I was asking, is signing checks for the district a task or a duty that's described in this position's job description? If it's not in the job description, I think it's less of a HR risk that you're just gonna go to the bank and change the signers at the bank. That's a little bit different, less risky situation.
And the position you're talking about is?
The deputy director.
Okay, so I don't see a problem there. Then
but
go ahead,
would you
Amy.
Agree there's some risk there?
There could always be a perceived risk when you change what staff do, and it's really up to it's their viewpoint, right? You don't have a lot of control over how people will think or feel about that.
Okay, so thank you, Amy, for that.
Good question. Are we leaving out the whole second sentence?
I was asking for suggestions from staff on how to leave one person as a signing member, but it kind of gets away from what Richard's main motion was, is to make it so that only board members can sign checks. So, go ahead, Sarah.
I took a stab at drafting some language if you want to.
Okay.
Hear it. Only board member. Well, that would line would have to
take
go.
Only,
but
yeah.
All checks will be signed by the board auditor and one other board member. If a board member is unavailable, the ED or AED may sign with written approval from the board supervisor.
Sarah, did you say ED or AED?
Mm-hmm. So if it's an emergency check signing situation, how are you going to get it written approval?
Well, actually, how are you going to get the check written?
Well, actually, you'll be there. You would be there anyway because you're the main signer.
Yeah, but how would the check actually get written? Because only one person writes the checks, right? That's Amy.
What do you mean?
Well, say you need a check to do something with. Amy's not available.
We're talking about signing checks, though, not writing
well,
checks.
Well, someone has to write it to get it signed, right?
That's what we're I think your question is separate from the what we're talking
it
about.
It can be separate or it can be together.
I thought we were specifically talking about check signing, though.
Yeah, we're just talking about check signing, not writing.
Well, you're talking
so
about
if you're going to be there already to sign the checks and there's no other board member available, you'll be sitting there with either the acting director or the head director, and you will give them written permission for that day to sign whatever check that is.
It would have to be another board member as far as procedure, because the you have the point is to have another board member have giving authority or being the authority. So if they're in a checks, if Amy prepared a check, Richard's here to sign it, Richard can't or shouldn't be able to give authority to a staff member to sign it. That should come from another board member.
But he's the auditor, he should be able to get that permission.
Yeah, he should be able to do that just fine.
Okay. Well,
Who else could do it? Because no one else is available.
That's
I mean, I can understand the check and balance
that,
there.
The point is the point of what he's doing, what he's proposing is having two board members signing checks. So if it comes into a situation.
So then an email would be sent to another board member saying, hey, Richard's here to sign checks, but we don't have another board member. Can you just approve this since I have email on my phone, you have email on your phone, and we can say, yeah, go for it.
Right, that's in theory. So the other supervisor would have to agree.
Because you're kind of checks and balances.
Because you need two supervisors.
Yeah, right.
Instead of him giving staff,
right.
Because he's signing it, and then for him
right,
to give
right,
staff.
Right.
See what I mean?
So.
But that could be something like, you two are out of town, and I call Linda, and I say, hey, this is the situation. Richard's here to sign these checks. Would you mind approving or authorizing me to sign this so you don't have to drive all the way in, or because maybe you're ill or, you know, whatever it might be.
Right,
can you send
right.
an email to me with this authorization and then I'll, you know, allowing
right.
me to sign as the second signer to what Richard's already signed?
Yeah.
So then that would be on a per check approval basis? Is that what I mean?
Well,
if this emergency
you're only
arises.
Talking about two times in 3 years, let's say.
So maybe it could be worded, second sentence, in the event no second board member is available for a emergency, is that correct? Emergency.
For a check signing.
For a check signing, a second board member may authorize either ED or AED.
Okay. What did you get out of that, Ashley?
I heard two different things, either to remove the word only from the first line or to just strike the whole first line because it becomes... So striking the first line and starting with all checks will be signed by the board auditor and one other board member. In the event that a second board member is not available, a second board member may authorize for the acting executive director or executive director to sign the check. And then we did not come all the way back around to the preference of order on board supervisors in the last sentence.
Good job.
Yeah, what you said is that.
Good job. So.
Do we need an order of preference?
It's laid out in the auditor duties. It says. I mean, it says that it goes from auditor to vice chair to chair.
Okay.
I could copy that out of that policy.
Did you want to raise your hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds like maybe there's some agreement on some language here. Did you want me to take this back and then draft a policy for you to review at the next meeting?
Do you want to do that, or do you want to just run with what Ashley said and
have her read it again, and maybe just go with that?
But I think what Sarah's saying is we'll need to insert this into something that's a full policy and procedure, and the board might want to review that before to make sure that you like that policy rather than just saying you like this piece of language. And you want me to read it to you again?
Yes, please.
All checks will be signed by the board auditor and one other board member. in the event that another board member is not, a second board member is not available, a second board member may authorize the executive director or acting executive director to sign the check.
And then, so that sounds good, and then I would just go ahead and put in the order of vice chair, then board chair, then other board member.
So your language sounds good.
So, go ahead, Sarah.
I'm just saying, whether or not this motion is made today, that's fine. We'll still need to develop a policy that's in that format, and I would rather have the board review that and adopt that policy.
A policy, because you know, because that language isn't specific enough? I don't understand.
Because it's not
in the same format as all of our other policies.
Like, it's not a page ready to put into the book. Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, that couldn't happen today, I guess.
I don't understand why I wouldn't be able to, but...
Because this page isn't ready to put in the book like that.
Well, because we've made some changes here in handwriting, you know, we'll want to put this in the same template, in the same format, and have it be an official policy, and
like
the policy...
All these dates and things up here...
And that way, if there's any additional procedures that you guys have or anything else that you want to add to it, you're able to do that. Any additional clarification, you can review the other section 6.1.
Would you call that 6.1.8?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how you list it, have it listed on there. I think that's a fine section in 6.1. I'm looking at all of them. Do you think that makes sense to me?
Yeah, that's 6.1.7 was the last one, so this could be under 6.1.8.
And we're calling check signing policy, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Do you want to finalize it?
What's easiest for staff, to go ahead and vote on it now or and make a policy or put it in the proper format?
I think a good best practice would be for, you guys have had this proposal today and a lot of discussion. We've actually come to an agreement on some language. I think it would be a great idea for staff to then draft that policy and send it out for one more final review of the board, just to ensure that everything is exactly how you want it, and that everything is clear, there's no questions, and then adopt it in its official policy form rather than a motion.
Okay, well, we had a motion and a second already, so we need to vote on it, so it'll go forward or die. Can you read it what you have one more time?
Sure. All checks will be signed by the board auditor and one other board member. In the event a second board member is not available, a second board member may authorize the executive director or acting executive director to sign the check. And then we'll take the third sentence, and I don't have the language yet, but basically say that order of preference for the second board supervisor goes to the vice chair and then the board chair.
I think he just wants the third sentence in there, in the event the board auditor is not available, that first signer duty goes to vice chair, then board chair.
Sure.
I think that's what he's looking for.
So we need to finish our motion.
Well, you got a motion as it stood here, so you'd have to do it, and you'd have to vote on the way it is here, and then it would succeed or die, or you can do a friendly amendment to what this original motion was. If you want to go forward with the more updated version, then I would, I'm not sure how to, with the proper procedures, I would say probably either there needs to be amendment or as the way it was presented. And then
we can make a friendly amendment to what she just read.
You can do that. So Linda would have to make a friendly amendment to the way she just read it, and then you would have to accept it.
And then we would approve it now and then,
then
we vote on it now, and then we give final approval after they've formatted.
I would agree with that. Does that sound acceptable, Smith?
I think that we should basically allow the motion to die or amend the motion completely to have it as an amendment for a policy creation, because we need the policy to be created, so.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Hanna?
I would respectfully suggest that the line Samantha was going down with also recommend or the board directing staff to review other policies that may be in contrast to it, such as policies and procedures, such as the job description for the deputy director, to remove that stuff as well and bring that back to you. Because there's going to be every motion or every change or addition to policy probably needs a review of the other policies to be sure that they're not contrasting each other, which I think you guys had a couple months back.
So,
issue.
Samantha, would you do a friendly amendment of kind of what you just said?
So, you want me to
do a friendly amendment? Well,
So, I mean, we basically need to not have a motion for this because we're creating a policy now.
Right, so it either has to die or
and that's your
right. So I can call for the vote. I can call for the vote, but if you wanted to do an amendment to create a check writing policy, then we could vote and then that
would
be.
But it's a check signing policy.
Or check sign out policy. Okay. So I'll just
I think what Joe was saying was that we would let it die, let it get formatted,
and then
finalize the deputy director's job description, and right. Vote on it next time as the motion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
A new procedure. It wouldn't even be a motion then.
It would just
be a procedure.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So let's go ahead and any more discussion? Let's go and vote. All in favor of 6.1.8 check writing policy as it's written on this piece of paper. All in favor, signify by saying aye. All opposed, signify by saying aye. Aye. What's the next one?
Abstentions. All abstain.
Okay. So you have that recorded. So.
Can you restate who voted how?
Abstention for Samantha and. Three no's. The rest.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So motion dies.
And then break it in.
Yes.
I just wanted to reiterate that I have an action item.
Correct.
To develop a check signing policy with the language that was approved at this meeting. Review that against the other financial policies that we have to ensure there's not any conflicts, and also review the deputy director's job description to ensure that there's not a conflict or an issue with that.
Okay.
So that was a friendly suggestion for
right,
the public.
Right.
Does that sound?
Samantha brought up at the very beginning the third party issue. And in this review of the check signing policy, I think it would be good to check with the county or whoever does this stuff in the county to make sure that you are not required to have a third party. Very possible you're not, but they should probably, whoever in the county oversees the board would probably like to know if you're going to change policies.
Go ahead, Shauna.
This is Shauna Joy from the State Conservation Commission. The State Conservation Commission oversees conservation districts, not the county government, and you are not required to have a third party CPA.
Good. So you straighten that?
Thank you, Shauna.
Yep.
Okay. Did you have anything else, Richard?
That's the coffee pot. It'll turn off.
I was thinking it was somebody's computer. So let's discuss the potential motion.
Conservation District Journal on question guidance example.
12-013018. The discussion on this motion is that any staff member that will be traveling out of county or out of state, and any portion of travel expense is to be reimbursed by TCD or any pass-through funds, then it will need to have approval in advance by either the AED in consultation and communication with the board auditor or board chair. If the amount is over $100, it will need to be approved in writing by the AED in consultation and communication with the board auditor or chair. What's staff's thoughts on that?
That's very confusing. What I'm hearing in this is that essentially any reimbursement to staff for travel-related expenses must be approved in writing by the executive director or alternate with communication to the board chair and board auditor. Is that, that's essentially what that says, correct? I just want to make sure I'm understanding what's written here.
It says in advance, it doesn't say in writing, but.
I think
it does at the bottom.
Writing.
Okay, $100 that will need to be approved in writing, okay.
I think on the second line between travel expense and is, it should also say that. Travel expense that is to be reimbursed.
And then the statement where it says approval in advance by either the AD or who. If it's saying either, it should be the AD or someone else.
AD.
So, just throwing grammar out.
I'm thinking it's either the AD in consultation with the board auditor or the chair. I don't know.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Just a suggestion that we spent over a half an hour talking about three sentences on the first one. It's likely that none of these are ready for prime time and should be reviewed by staff. And we're sitting here spending how much time on this right now? With concerns about the budget, is that the best use of everybody's time? Why don't you just give this to staff, have them draft something, some language that makes sense, and that everybody, there was four different interpretations out there of what these three sentences of the first one said. So obviously they're not clear enough to be policies.
Well, it's actually a good point, and these have been out to the board and the staff since early part of the
session. Did anybody direct the staff to create policies in the format that's needed?
Well, they were put out for comments.
I've never seen this.
Well, my opinion, I've sat on a lot of boards, these are not ready to be voted on.
No.
These are ideas. This is spitballing. You need to put them in language that is clear and that staff can act upon so that when they consult the policies, they know what to do.
Go ahead, sorry.
I just wanted to clarify that these motions were sent out to the board in December for comment. And I got a couple of screenshots from Eric after that of these motions, and then didn't receive anything up until in a Word document or until just this week. So I haven't been directed or had time to generate policies based on these motions. My understanding is I think there's maybe some confusion about making a motion to generate this policy and generating a policy and then adopting it. I'm happy to support either way, but certainly it would be helpful if we could work together to develop a policy and then bring that before the whole board so that everybody's had ample time to review and provide comment. We've had ample time to check that for any conflicts against our other policies. And you know, certainly there's this component of Doug's feedback as well about a policy approval process which each of you have, which, you know, shares about bringing a policy forth or a discussion about the need for a policy, creating a draft of the policy for review, taking everyone's input, and then having a third setting where you're approving final policies so that they've been well vetted. And then, you know, there's certainly a couple of board members have brought up from time to time. Some of these you also might want to have legal review over.
I would concur with that. There's some of this stuff that it could be interpreted as not even being legal. Taking away comp time. That, if somebody's earned comp time, you can't just pass a policy that it goes away.
I don't think that's what it says.
It certainly reads that way to me.
It would include any comp time built up. That is... So...
Which one is that?
That would be theft of wages.
That's motion 14. I have some concerns because I did send comments back with regards to these, and none of my comments are reflected, so... I would also like to be able to possibly send them to staff and at that point have them, you know, draft up potential policies. But, yeah.
So we actually did Doug's suggestions for the first one. It ended up being pretty much just like he recommended. Discussing, coming up with an agreement or wording, putting it out for formalization in writing, and then actually voting on it next time.
In theory, what happens is we'll send some of this type of stuff to a staff member, and then they would put it in policy format and bring it to a meeting. Mm-hmm. And at that meeting, we would go through it and say, okay, well, this doesn't read properly, let's change this. And then the staff would take that back, do that, and then the next meeting, that third meeting, we would be able to sit down and finalize it and have a new policy in our policies and procedure book. So it's
still three meetings.
Yeah, it is. And then, but what I'm saying is typically we send this stuff to Sarah or Ashley or whomever and say, help us draft up some policies. Mm-hmm. And that's where they go through, and that's why they have that template that's pretty much exactly the same for everything. And then they bring it to us and say, here's what I think you meant, and that's when we can say, oh, no, we meant this, or we meant this, and it's
so
much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Pretty much the same discussion, just kind of in a different...
In a more regimented format.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, everybody's right, that's correct. The thing is, it's been out there floating around, and now we got to sit here and, like you said, you know, spend all this time on one thing. Can we turn this over to staff and have them work on it so we can have something to look at reasonably soon so we can proceed with updating?
How long do you think that would take, Sarah, on the... Looks like you have something to go off on the first motion, so 12, 13, 14, and 16?
I think that this is something that would be great to bring back to the next regularly scheduled board meeting, is, you know, some drafts of these. I think there's certainly, with the information that's provided here, a lot of questions about, you know, clarity of the motion and intent of the motion, and I think there's some misinformation included in some of the motions, and so it might be something good that we have some discussion on. I'm just saying, I'm not sure you could get to a final draft state with some of these by February if we don't talk about them.
If we don't talk about them now?
At some point.
Yeah.
Well, we had an hour before and the discussion on.
Okay, well, let's go forward now.
Joe, this one.
Yeah.
Maybe the suggestion of a subcommittee to work on it between now and the next meeting. So, beginning with Sarah. Commented on it, getting what Samantha commented on it. Samantha, I like what you said. But it wasn't in theory because you guys just did this 2 years ago. So you went through policies and procedures and the process that you outlined is basically what you did. So it's in practice. Maybe 3 years ago, but.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have one quick procedural, I mean, comment or observation. Richard, are you the auditor?
That's correct.
And so you have proposed a motion that would, I think, in some ways enhance your position. I think people could see that as inappropriate. So as long as this has been dropped, I would suggest that one of the other board members that proposed the motion, so it doesn't look like any kind of conflict of interest.
Good point. I would also like to quote from 1.2 Board of Supervisors guidelines in officer position under auditor. It says the auditor is the board supervisor who is primarily responsible for the financial oversight of the district. So this is part of taking that responsibility.
Yeah, but I still think it would just look better. It would have a better appearance if one of the other board members proposed something that affects your duties.
Point well taken.
Can we take a 5-minute bathroom break? Come back to this. Let's do 9 minutes. So I have on my 3:31. Let's come back at 3:40.
I have a question for you. I have a question for you. Yeah. Yeah. I, you know,